in a region long gripped by coups, colonial scars, and counter-terrorism campaigns, one West African leader is defying expectations, not with tanks or speeches, but with architecture, art, and cinema. Captain Ibrahim Traoré, Burkina Faso's 36-year-old military ruler, is using culture as a weapon of legitimacy, a balm for national identity, and a signal of Pan-African rebirth. Under his junta, a massive mausoleum now towers over Ouagadougou, honoring slain revolutionary Edomas Sankara, a man once silenced by bullets, now resurrected in bronze and memory. Designed by the world-renowned architect Francis Kéré, the monument does more than honor the past. It dares to reimagine the future. This bold cultural agenda doesn't stop with stone and symbolism. Traoré is also reviving FESPACO, the continent's oldest and largest film festival, as a rallying point for Pan-African identity, creative resistance, and political imagination. His message is clear. Burkina Faso will not beg for dignity from the West. It will build it. But is this cultural awakening a genuine renaissance, or a carefully orchestrated theater to secure power, project unity, and redraw alliances in the Sahel? And can a nation fractured by insecurity be remade through festivals and monuments? So we ask, can culture save a nation before it collapses? Chapter 1. The Mausoleum and the Myth. Resurrecting Sankara for a New Era. Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso, March 2023. The heat hung low and heavy over the capital, but the air was charged with something far weightier than the weather. Crowds gathered in reverent silence as the bronze likeness of Thomas Sankara, Burkina Faso's most iconic and assassinated revolutionary, was unveiled before a towering monument unlike anything the country had ever seen. Built not only of stone and symbolism, but of political intent, the Thomas Sankara Mausoleum had finally become a reality. 36 years after his death, the man behind this resurrection, Captain Ibrahim Traoré, the youngest head of state in the world at the time, an army captain turned cultural architect of the nation's rebirth. What Traoré accomplished wasn't just architectural. He weaponized memory. In a land where coups had become routine and corruption a predictable melody in the rhythm of governance, this military pivoted toward one another. The immediate cause was pragmatic. Facing a shared jihadist threat and diplomatic exile, they needed each other. But the deeper glue that bound them was a shared historical trauma and cultural memory, one steeped in colonial dispossession and neo-colonial humiliation. What began as military alignment, joint security pacts, border patrols, and anti-terror operations, soon evolved into a cultural movement. In March 2023, the three countries announced the formation of the Alliance of Sahelian States, ISS. While primarily aimed at security cooperation, its communiques were riddled with cultural invocations, a call for a Sahelian renaissance, for sovereign traditions, for African pride, unfettered by colonial chains. Traoré's Burkina Faso quickly took the lead on this cultural front. The cultural arm of the alliance, Ouagadougou, under Traoré's direction, became a hub for Sahelian intellectual and artistic collaboration. New cultural summits emerged that brought together musicians, poets, muralists, architects, and griots from the region. These weren't mere celebrations, they were laboratories of identity engineering. Shared initiatives included the Sahel Renaissance Mural Project, painting revolutionary iconography across the borders of all three nations. The Pan-Sahel Film Exchange, launched from FESPACO, sending films between the three countries with curated discussions on post-colonial identity. Shared curriculums, new textbook coalitions were announced featuring Sankara, Modibo Keita, and other revolutionary figures as regional, not just national, heroes. a tri-national anthem competition, launched by cultural ministers from the three juntas, to compose a unifying cultural anthem for the Sahel bloc. The messaging was clear. Our struggle is shared, our history connected, and our future intertwined. The return of the griot. Memory as strategy. Perhaps the most powerful cultural force in this alliance isn't film or monuments, but the resurgence of the griot. In all three nations, the traditional West African storytellers, once fading into obscurity, have been re-elevated. Their roles, to craft narratives that legitimize the current regimes, educate youth, and restore pride in pre-colonial greatness. In Gao, Mali, griots now perform weekly sessions in schools. In Zinda, Niger, they chant at military parades. In Kudugu, Burkina Faso, they narrate the legacy of Sankara as if he were a mythical ancestor, part of the oral pantheon of resistance. In one popular performance, a Malian griot weaves a tale. The white man came with books to blind us, then gave us chains to bind us. But now, the Sahel rises, clothed in its own story. Our tongues, our drums, our pride, no longer borrowed. The juntas, recognizing the griot's reach, have begun funding cultural programs that blend griot performances with military celebrations. Critics call it dangerous propaganda. Supporters call it the rebirth of historical ownership. Language and the struggle for decolonization. Central to this cultural realignment is the question of language. For generations, French was the language of instruction, governance, and cultural capital in these countries. But today, a linguistic revolution is underway. Traoré's junta, along with Goïta in Mali and Tiani in Niger, is pushing for the inclusion and, in some cases, the replacement of French with local languages in schools and public life. Radio broadcasts now include Moré, Bambara, and Hausa alongside French. Schools are piloting dual language curriculums. Cultural programs are awarding artists who publish in indigenous languages. The symbolism is potent. By rejecting the linguistic inheritance of colonialism, the Sahel bloc is reclaiming not just sovereignty, but cognitive and cultural freedom. This shift, however, comes with challenges: pedagogical, logistical, and political. Some educators worry about the quality of instruction, while opposition voices question whether this cultural turn is genuine or simply populist nationalism cloaked in decolonial rhetoric. Cultural diplomacy without the West. While France and the US have distanced themselves diplomatically from the Sahel bloc, other partners have stepped into the cultural vacuum. Russia, for instance, has expanded cultural ties through media exchanges, historical documentaries on anti-colonial resistance, and Pan-African symposia in Moscow. Turkey has opened cultural centers in Ouagadougou and Bamako, offering art residencies and language scholarships. Iran and China have hosted exhibitions highlighting the Sahel struggle against imperialism. But perhaps more telling is how these nations are beginning to engage each other outside of traditional Western frameworks. In a major break from precedent, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger jointly boycotted the 2023 Francophonie Summit, stating that the organization had failed to represent the aspirations of post-colonial Africa. Instead, they proposed a Sahel Francophone Forum, not to celebrate French language, but to interrogate it. Pan-Africanism, reforged or repurposed? The vision promoted by these regimes claims to echo the Pan-African ideals of the 20th century. But it's worth asking, is this truly Pan-Africanism or a rebranded nationalism? Classic Pan-Africanism was built on unity across borders, racial solidarity, and often democratic ideals. It emphasized African unity against authoritarianism and toward integration. What's emerging in the Sahel is more militant, exclusionary, and state-centric. Instead of grassroots civil society driving integration, military regimes are curating identity through top-down cultural engineering. Still, it resonates. Many Africans, particularly the youth, see these movements as necessary corrections to a global system that has failed them. In their view, liberal democracy brought debt, dependency, and insecurity, while the juntas, despite their flaws, are at least fighting for dignity, symbolism and power, uniforms and drums. In modern Burkina Faso, the lines between military and cultural uniforms have blurred. Drummers in Faso, Danfani tunics, march beside soldiers. School children memorize Sankara's speeches during physical education. Dancers at national events salute the flag with a precision once reserved for infantry drills. This merging of military imagery and cultural performance is not accidental. It reflects a deeper ideological shift, the belief that national identity must be disciplined, rehearsed, and performed, just like a military operation. The risks of this model are profound. While it may instill pride and purpose, it also erodes the space for dissent, where culture is free to challenge power rather than serve it. The pulse on the street. What the people say. In Wahiguya, northern Burkina Faso, we met Fatoumata Tamboura, a 26-year-old teacher, organizing weekend Pan-African dance classes for displaced children. She supports the junta's cultural policies, even as she remains skeptical of its governance. "They are giving us back our stories," she said. "We have lost so much. Family, land, safety. But now we are learning who we are again. Maybe from that we can rebuild." In Niamey, Hassan Guero, a filmmaker, sees it differently. These leaders quote Sankara and Nkrumah, but they fear their own people. They want loyalty, not unity. And in Bamako, 16-year-old rapper Demba Dex went viral for a freestyle attacking both France and the junta. "You wear Sankara's face, but you shut Sankara's mouth." The cultural awakening is real, but so are the contradictions. Closing reflections. A flag, a film, a future one image from a recent Sahel Youth Forum remains etched in memory. A giant flag, stitched together from cloth pieces, brought by delegates from Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. In the center, Sankara's face, flanked by traditional drums, a film reel, and a Kalashnikov wrapped in kente. It was awkward, it was powerful, and it was exactly the paradox of the moment. The Sahel identity block is rising, with art and arms, memory and ambition. It is not perfect. It may not last. But for now, it speaks to something undeniable. A hunger for agency, for meaning, for a future that is neither imposed nor inherited, but made. Chapter 4. Culture as legitimacy, propaganda, power, or genuine rebirth. Ouagadougou. October 2023. On the anniversary of Thomas Sankara's assassination, Captain Ibrahim Traoré stood solemnly before the Sankara mausoleum, flanked by cabinet ministers, students, griots, and soldiers. Behind him, Sankara's bronze likeness reached skyward. Before him, television cameras broadcast his image to millions across West Africa. "We do not imitate revolutionaries," he declared. "We become them. Through blood, through history, through culture." The crowd roared. Choirs sang Sankarist anthems. Children recited anti-imperialist poems. But as the spectacle unfolded with meticulous choreography, one question became increasingly urgent. Is this cultural renaissance a true rebirth or a sophisticated tool of authoritarian legitimacy? In the past 2 years, Traoré's junta has reshaped the cultural landscape of Burkina Faso. Monuments, festivals, murals, curriculum reforms, griot councils, and Pan-African summits all now serve a sweeping cultural project. it is unprecedented in scope, but it is also deeply political. Culture in Burkina Faso today is not just identity, it is statecraft, and the lines between empowerment, performance, and propaganda have never been more blurred. Historical lessons. How power wears culture. Throughout Africa's post-independence period, rulers have used cultural symbols to legitimize fragile regimes. Mobutu Sese Seko famously launched an authenticity campaign in Zaire, promoting traditional dress and African names while consolidating dictatorial control. Kwame Nkrumah's Ghana erected heroic statues and held pan-African cultural festivals as part of his vision of continental unity, right up to his overthrow in 1966. Burkina Faso, under Traoré, follows a similar arc, but with modern tools. The junta funds youth TikTok creators to spread Sankarist slogans. Schools now open with nationalist oaths rather than national anthems. Cultural grants are reserved for artists who promote state-sanctioned themes of sovereignty, unity, and anti-imperial resistance. This is more than soft power. It is soft control. Where past military regimes ruled through fear and censorship, Traoré's junta presents a more seductive model. Rule through memory, art, and identity. But beneath the surface, cultural power, like all forms of power, has winners, losers, and limits. Education reform. Memory in the classroom. One of the most far-reaching cultural interventions by Traoré's government is the overhaul of the national curriculum. In August 2023, the Ministry of Education announced that all primary and secondary school students would now be required to study Burkinabe revolutionary history, pre-colonial African civilizations, and pan-African political thought. New textbooks feature full-page spreads of Thomas Sankara, excerpts from his speeches, and comparative studies of anti-colonial figures like Patrice Lumumba and Amilcar Cabral. French Enlightenment philosophers have been replaced with griot, oral traditions, and the proverbs of Sahelian kings. Supporters argue this is long overdue. "We are finally being taught who we are," said one teacher from Tenkodogo, "not who the other colonizers wanted us to be." But critics warn of indoctrination masquerading as education. Notably absent from the new textbooks are lessons on democratic theory, political pluralism, or human rights. Discussions of free elections are glossed over. Critical analysis of Sankara's failures or of military governance more broadly are nowhere to be found. "We are not educating citizens," warned University Professor Jean-Baptiste Ouedraogo. "We are manufacturing believers." The media mirage. Cultural control on airwaves. In tandem with educational reform, the state has restructured public broadcasting. RTB, Radio Diffusion Television du Burkina, now dedicates weekly segments to the Revolution Lives, a program featuring reenactments of Sankara's speeches, historical documentaries on African unity, and interviews with junta-approved scholars. Private media outlets have been encouraged, through both grants and pressure, to feature constructive cultural content. This euphemism often means one thing: don't criticize the government. Journalists who veer from this line face consequences. In July 2023, investigative journalist Aline Traoré, no relation to the president, was detained for 3 days after publishing an article on censorship in state-run media. She was released without charge, but the message was clear: culture must serve the state, not scrutinize it. International watchdogs, such as Reporters Without Borders, have raised alarms about the increasing use of cultural protection as a rationale for silencing dissent. In this context, the cultural rebirth becomes a mirror room, where every reflection leads back to the junta. Grassroots versus government. Whose culture is it? Despite state attempts to choreograph cultural meaning, the people of Burkina Faso are not passive. Across the countryside, organic cultural movements are thriving, many of them independent of government funding or ideology. Community theatres perform plays about displacement and survival. Local musicians critique corruption in coded lyrics. Women's cooperatives revive ancient weaving patterns, not as nationalism, but as economic empowerment. One grassroots movement gaining traction is the Culture for Healing Network, which uses music therapy and storytelling to treat trauma among victims of jihadist violence. Their work, largely ignored by the state, focuses on restoration, not revolution. "We love Sankara," said Adama Zongo, one of the coordinators, "but we cannot eat his statue. We need food, safety, jobs, and yes, culture, but culture that heals, not distracts." This disconnect highlights a key tension. While the state promotes culture as spectacle, the people often seek it as sustenance. The risk of cultural exhaustion. There is also the danger of overexposure. By saturating public life with Sankarist imagery, revolutionary slogans, and pan-African rhetoric, the regime may be diluting their impact. Already, some youth refer to the constant memorializing as revolution fatigue. "The monument is nice," said 19-year-old Kader, a student in Ouagadougou. "But I still walk 2 hours to school. No electricity, no lunch. How long can a statue feed us?" The risk here is symbolic inflation. When powerful cultural symbols are used so frequently, so broadly, that they lose meaning, what begins as genuine reverence can morph into cynicism, satire, or silence. International eyes, applause, and anxiety. Abroad, Traoré's cultural policies have received mixed reviews. Pan-African intellectuals like Akile Mbembe and Ngugi Wa Thiong'o have praised the effort to reclaim identity and memory as tools of liberation. But human rights organizations and Western diplomats are more cautious. A recent report by Freedom House noted, "Burkina Faso's cultural renaissance may represent a historic shift in post-colonial identity, but it also risks entrenching authoritarian governance under the guise of sovereignty." France, once the dominant cultural patron of Francophone Africa, is watching with evident discomfort. Cultural attachés from Paris have quietly begun withdrawing from artistic collaborations, citing changing political conditions. In contrast, Russia, China, and Turkey have embraced a new paradigm, offering media support, museum partnerships, and cultural delegations. As Burkina Faso repositions itself geopolitically, its cultural alliances are shifting with it. What happens after the junta? The most pressing question may be this: can this cultural infrastructure outlast the regime that built it? History suggests mixed outcomes. After Sankara's assassination in Adini 1987, most of his policies were reversed within months. His murals were whitewashed, his name banned from newspapers, and his grave unmarked. It took 30 years to resurrect him. Today's cultural rebirth could suffer a similar fate if tied too tightly to Traoré's rule. Already, opposition parties in exile warn that once democracy returns, they will depoliticize the arts. Civil society leaders call for a cultural constitution, a legal framework that protects artistic freedom from the whims of any regime, military or civilian. Because if culture is to serve the nation, it must first be free from its rulers. Closing reflections. Between theater and truth. In the final scene of a state-funded documentary aired in October 2023, a fictional griot stands before a burning village, then turns to the camera and says, "You can build 1,000 statues, but if the people are hungry, they will eat the bronze." It was meant as allegory, but many saw it as a warning. The cultural revival underway in Burkina Faso is real. It is bold. It is transformative. But it is also vulnerable to exploitation, to exhaustion, to erasure. As Captain Traoré continues to inscribe his name in Burkina Faso's history books, through film, architecture, and education, the ultimate legacy of his cultural politics will not be decided in monuments or museums. It will be decided in whether his people feel more free, more secure, and more seen because of it. If culture is used to unify, empower, and heal, then this may indeed be a new dawn. But if it becomes a mask, a stage, or a shield for unchecked power, then it will join the long archive of lost African revolutions. Leaders sought legitimacy, not through brute force or mere rhetoric, but through sacred remembrance. The monument was no neutral structure. It was a statement, a turning point, a political ritual in concrete and bronze. But to understand the stakes of this bold cultural gesture, we must rewind to a different Burkina Faso, in a different era, when Sankara himself tried to build a nation from the ashes of colonialism, the short-lived revolution that never died. Thomas Sankara seized power in 1983, at the age of 33, launching what many considered the most radical experiment in African self-reliance since Ghana's Kwame Nkrumah. In just 4 years, he renamed the country from Upper Volta to Burkina Faso, land of upright people, and implemented sweeping reforms, land redistribution to peasants, mass vaccination campaigns, banning female genital mutilation, and urging women into leadership roles. He sold off government Mercedes cars and replaced them with humble Renault 5s, banned portraits of himself in public offices, and insisted that ministers fly economy class. To his supporters, Sankara was Africa's Che Guevara. To his enemies, internal and foreign, he was an unpredictable force, threatening the balance of neocolonial interests in the Sahel. On October 15, 1987, his revolution ended in gunfire. Betrayed and assassinated by his close ally, Blaise Compaoré, in a French-backed coup, Sankara was buried in an unmarked grave. For decades, his memory was suppressed, his ideas demonized or co-opted. But among the youth, Sankara lived on, in songs, in slogans, in whispers of what could have been. And now, under Traoré, he's being reinstalled, not just in hearts, but in stone. A mausoleum designed to make a statement. The decision to commission world-renowned architect Francis Kéré, a Burkinabe native and the first African to win the Pritzker Prize, was itself a political maneuver laced with meaning. Kéré's architecture is grounded in sustainability, cultural symbolism, and community participation. For the Sankara Mausoleum, he delivered more than just a tomb. He designed a sanctuary, a temple, a living museum. The site is layered with intentional symbolism. The seven-pointed star floor plan reflects the revolutionary ideals of the Sankarist era and mirrors motifs from the Burkinabe flag. The verticality of the structure, resembling a baobab tree, evokes the wisdom and rootedness Sankara preached. The red laterite stone, common in Sahelian soil, signals a return to the land and pride in African materials. And at its center stands a larger-than-life statue of Sankara, hand raised, face calm, looking not backward but forward. Visitors enter through a walkway lined with quotes from Sankara, etched into walls of polished volcanic rock. We must dare to invent the future. He who feeds you controls you. The revolution cannot triumph without the emancipation of women. These are not merely aphorisms. They are ideological armor, sharpened and displayed at a moment when Traoré needs both popular legitimacy and ideological cover. The young soldier ties himself to a legend. When Ibrahim Traoré took power in a coup in September 2022, ousting Lieutenant Colonel Paul-Henri Damiba, who had ousted President Kabore just 8 months earlier, Burkina Faso was in a free fall. Jihadist attacks had displaced nearly 2 million people, and confidence in state institutions was collapsing. Traoré, aged just 34, styled himself as a populist savior. But instead of building his image from scratch, he borrowed it from Sankara. His speeches echoed Sankarist cadence. His wardrobe, modest military uniforms without the flamboyance of Compaoré-era generals, mirrored Sankara's Spartan aesthetic. His slogans emphasized sovereignty, dignity, and the need for Burkina Faso to liberate itself from foreign tutelage. But the construction of the mausoleum was the boldest gesture yet. It wasn't just about reviving a hero. It was about fusing Traoré's own legitimacy with that of the man many consider Africa's last honest leader. In so doing, Traoré bypassed electoral approval and rooted his authority in historical continuity. Critics might call it opportunism, but many young Burkinabe call it justice. Voices of the youth. Why Sankara still resonates. Outside the mausoleum on inauguration day, 22-year-old Aissatou Sanou, a university student majoring in political science, held a handmade sign that read, "Traoré, Sankara, reborn." "I didn't grow up under Sankara," she said, "but his words were in my textbooks. His songs were in my home. When I see Traoré doing this, it's like he's telling us, we didn't forget, we didn't surrender." Others echoed this view. In the dusty towns of Bobo-Dioulasso and Kaya, Sankara murals have re-emerged, many newly painted since Traoré took power. The image of Sankara holding a Kalashnikov in one hand and a book in the other is everywhere. Graffiti, t-shirts, cell phone cases. But this isn't just nostalgia. It's a yearning for coherence, integrity, and revolutionary optimism in a time of chaos. Traoré knows this, and is carefully crafting a narrative that aligns his junta with the Sankarist spirit, even if his policies diverge in practice. Skepticism amid the ceremony. Not everyone is convinced. Amnesty International and civil society groups have noted that under Traoré's leadership, press freedoms have tightened, political opposition is largely silenced, and elections remain suspended indefinitely. For these critics, the Sankara revival is a smokescreen, a cultural performance masking authoritarian consolidation. "We're seeing a military regime using symbols of liberation while removing the very freedoms Sankara fought for," said Habib Diallo, a lawyer with the Burkina Faso Bar Association. "Culture is powerful, yes, but it must not be used as camouflage." There's also concern about historical simplification. Sankara was not universally beloved. His policies alienated elites and unions, and some accuse his government of suppressing dissent. To turn him into a saint may whitewash the complexities of his rule and provide moral cover for Traoré's junta. But in the eyes of many, especially the youth, these nuances are secondary to the emotional and symbolic power of resurrection. Monuments as weapons in the struggle for sovereignty. This isn't the first time a regime has used cultural symbols to forge political legitimacy. From Julius Nyerere's Ujamaa villages in Tanzania to Patrice Lumumba statues in the Congo, African leaders have long drawn on cultural nationalism to stake claims to post-colonial authority. But in Burkina Faso today, the stakes are uniquely high. Sandwiched between jihadist insurgencies and foreign military withdrawals, the country faces an existential crisis. France's diminished presence, the rise of Russian influence via the Wagner Group, and the growing alliance with Mali and Niger suggest a geopolitical pivot, and the cultural strategy plays into it. By building the mausoleum, Traoré isn't just honoring Sankara. He's asserting Burkina Faso's intellectual and moral sovereignty. He's signaling to the region and the world that this nation will define its own heroes, tell its own stories, and set its own course. Whether that course leads to liberation or repression remains to be seen. Closing reflections. Memory is a battlefield. As dusk falls on the Thomas Sankara Mausoleum, floodlights illuminate his statue. In the distance, a school choir sings his anthem. The crowd begins to thin. Journalists pack up. Soldiers remain on guard. Captain Traore's face appears on the large digital screens surrounding the site. He gives a brief speech. We do not build monuments to remember the dead. We build them to remind the living. Sankara lives not in bronze, but in how we rise. It is a powerful line, poetic, strategic, and deeply political. In Burkina Faso today, memory is not just a story, it is a structure. And like any structure, it can be used to shelter, to inspire, or to control. Chapter 2, Rewriting the Script. FESPACO and the Cinema of Resistance. Ouagadougou, February 2023. In the heart of West Africa, under the scorching sun and the watchful gaze of soldiers in olive-green uniforms, a red carpet unfurled in front of the Cine Burkina. It was the 28th edition of FESPACO, the Pan-African Film and Television Festival of Ouagadougou, and something felt different this year. Gone were the heavily Western-sponsored opening galas. In their place, a curated celebration of African resistance, sovereignty, and memory. Filmmakers from Mali, Niger, Senegal, and Chad gathered not only to showcase their art, but to participate in what felt like a cinematic rebellion, a screen-bound uprising against cultural dependency and post-colonial inertia. At the helm of this revival was Captain Ibrahim Traore, whose junta had poured resources into resurrecting the once stagnant festival as part of a broader campaign to recenter national identity around African storytelling. Like the mausoleum to Sankara, FESPACO under Traore is no longer just about film. It is political terrain. But can cinema truly become the new frontline of resistance? Or is it simply the next canvas onto which power is projected? The history of FESPACO, a festival born of defiance. Founded in 1969, FESPACO has long been more than a film festival. It is a cultural institution birthed from a radical dream to create a cinematic space where Africans could tell African stories, free from the narrative grip of Hollywood and Europe. For decades, FESPACO offered a rare platform for filmmakers challenging colonial legacies, critiquing corrupt regimes, or imagining futures shaped by local rather than foreign realities. It played a central role in the careers of Ousmane Sembène, Souleymane Cissé, and Idrissa Ouedraogo, filmmakers who used cinema not for escapism, but for enlightenment. But like many post-colonial dreams, FESPACO faltered. Funding dried up. Government support became sporadic, and international influence slowly crept in, along with corporate sponsorships and politically sanitized themes. By 2019, some critics claimed FESPACO had become just another gala of polished award shows and festival tourism. Then came Traore. A junta revives the silver screen. Within weeks of seizing power, Captain Traore issued a directive. Reinvest in FESPACO as a tool of national reawakening. Not only did the junta provide logistical and security support for the 2023 edition, they reoriented its mission. The result was a striking contrast from previous years. Western embassies scaled back their sponsorships. Panels on decolonizing storytelling replaced industry mixers. Themes of African sovereignty, cultural resistance, and pan-Sahelian solidarity took center stage. The opening film, Sira, a Malian Burkinabe production, told the story of a young woman kidnapped by jihadists in the Sahel who fights back not with guns but through storytelling, ritual, and resistance. The lead actress, Bintou Bakayoko, wore a Sankara pin to the premiere. In her post-screening interview, she declared, "We do not act for entertainment. We act for survival, for dignity, for Africa." The crowd erupted. Cinema as cultural counteroffensive. Why is film suddenly so central to Traoré's strategy? Because cinema is narrative warfare, and Traoré's regime is engaged in a battle over who gets to define Burkina Faso's image to the world. After decades of being portrayed through the narrow lens of terrorism, instability, and poverty, the junta is determined to flip the script. They're funding films that glorify traditional values, honor revolutionary figures, and challenge Western paternalism. They are sponsoring documentaries about African resistance to colonial education, indigenous justice systems, and revolts erased from the Francophone curriculum. One such film, La Voix des Griots, won the FESPACO Special Jury Prize. It traces the oral history of Sahelian resistance from 1800s, French incursions to the 2022 anti-French protests in Ouagadougou. In one haunting scene, an elderly griot tells a room full of children, "They took our gold, then our language. We gave them silence. Now we will give them stories." The tightrope of artistic freedom. But beneath the applause lies an uneasy tension. How free is cultural expression under military rule? The Traoré government, while encouraging nationalist cinema, also imposes unspoken ideological boundaries. Several filmmakers, speaking anonymously, noted that themes of state corruption, gender-based violence within the military, or calls for democratic return were discouraged or passed over during grand selections. "There's a new kind of censorship," one young director from Bobo-Dioulasso Lasso confided. "It's not like under Compaoré, where they banned films outright. Now, they just don't fund you, or they lose your festival paperwork." Still, many artists argue that the moment is too important to sit out. "Yes, there are red lines," said Rahim Koulibaly, whose film Sang pour le Peuple won Best Screenplay. "But our ancestors also had red lines, and they crossed them. We can work within this moment and still plant seeds of future dissent." International optics and Pan-African solidarity. The 2023 edition of FESPACO didn't just attract Burkinabe artists. Filmmakers from Mali, Niger, and Chad came in droves, many supported by their own transitional regimes. Together, they form what some now call the Sahelian Cultural Bloc. In panel discussions, these artists shared how their countries are experiencing similar cultural awakenings as part of broader sovereignty campaigns. Malian director Amadou Diallo noted, "Our politics are under siege, so we fight through film. We show our people that freedom isn't only fought for with guns. It's filmed, it's sung, it's danced." This growing cultural unity mirrors the emerging political alignment between the three countries, who recently withdrew from ECOWAS and are exploring new alliances outside traditional Francophone frameworks. In many ways, FESPACO has become their unofficial summit. Less bureaucratic, more emotional. FESPACO in the shadow of Sankara. Thomas Sankara himself was a passionate advocate for African arts. In the 1980s, he argued that culture was the oxygen of independence and pushed for state investment in local music, film, and fashion. Reviving FESPACO under Traoré thus links neatly with the wider Sankarist resurrection underway. Just as the mausoleum in Ouagadougou has become a physical anchor for memory, FESPACO is the living expression of that memory. Sankara once said, "A soldier without culture is a potential criminal." By promoting FESPACO, Traoré is rebranding his military not as repressive, but as custodians of culture. But again, critics warn that this creates a false equivalence, where uniforms and art are conflated, and where critique becomes disloyalty. As filmmaker Fatimata Diallo noted in her closing remarks, "Cinema must challenge power, not serve it. If we cannot laugh at our leaders or cry at our history, then FESPACO is not art. It is propaganda." The audience speaks. National identity in the seeds. Inside the Cine Burkina, where dusty ceiling fans whirred and laughter echoed through dimly lit halls. The power of film was palpable. In screening after screening, audiences wept, cheered, and debated, sometimes more passionately than they would at a political rally. One middle-aged attendee, wearing a traditional Fasodan Fani tunic, summed it up. "I never understood why my father hated the French. Now I do. I saw it on that screen." Across social media, clips from the festival spread virally. Hashtags like Sankara Cinema and Burkina Film resists trended across Francophone Africa. For once, the global narrative about Burkina Faso wasn't focused on jihadists or refugees. It was about art, identity, resistance, the road ahead. Can film outlast the junta? As the festival closed, Captain Traoré took the stage, not in military fatigues, but in a simple white robe. He thanked the filmmakers, the griots, the audience. "You do not just make films," he said. "You make foundations. For a new Africa. For an Africa that does not ask to be seen, but demands to be known." The applause was thunderous. But when the lights dimmed and the crowds dispersed, the underlying question lingered in the humid Ouagadougou night. Can Fespaco remain a beacon of cultural autonomy beyond the lifespan of Traoré's rule? Or will it become, like so many post-colonial institutions, another tool of power, eventually discarded or co-opted? In a region as fragile as the Sahel, culture is more than expression. It is survival. And for now, the silver screen is lit with both hope and shadows. Chapter 3. Pan-Africanism. Reimagined the Sahel Identity. Block. Niamey, Niger, September 2023. On a dusty parade ground, ringed by young soldiers and blazing flags, a group of griots stepped forward, draped in indigo robes, their chorus strings echoing the tales of war, betrayal, and unity. The lyrics, ancient and new, fused seamlessly. They spoke of Samori Touré, of the colonizers who cut up Africa, and of three modern names, Traoré, Goïta, Tiani, Burkina, Faso, Mali, Niger, once separate battlegrounds of coups, insurgencies, and foreign interventions, now marching, chanting, and creating together under one shared vision, a Sahelian alliance forged through sovereignty, survival, and increasingly, culture. While alliances in West Africa have traditionally been defined through economics, defense, or colonial patronage, particularly under France, a new regional identity is being carved out in unexpected places, through festivals, historical monuments, revolutionary rhetoric, and a rejection of Western narratives. The dream of Pan-Africanism, once championed by Nkrumah, Nyerere, and Sankara, had long been dismissed as idealism. But in the hands of this new generation of military rulers, it is being reimagined as a weapon of strategy, nationalism, and regional cohesion. And culture is its first battlefield. From isolation to alliance, the pivot point. In early 2023, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger all faced unprecedented isolation. ECOWAS and the African Union suspended them. France scaled down its military presence. International aid plummeted. Sanctions bit hard. And yet, instead of surrendering, these nations